My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of Inside United. Today we have a returning guest, Jessica Hendrickson. Jessica's job here is French communication analyst and webmaster, and she has just returned from Ivory Coast. It's called Côte d'Ivoire.
Yep.
I still can't say it. I've tried, been practicing it just so I could say it right here.
That was good.
It was close enough. Now, on a podcast, obviously you can't see us. For me, I'm always grateful for that, that I could just be a voice. But Jessica's wearing some apparel that's very, very interesting from Ivory Coast.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a type of tunic, I think. I don't know exactly the word for it, but this was a gift from the campers at the end of the week when, on the last night before we were about to leave the following morning, they presented all of us with these garments that are traditional clothing from the north of Côte d'Ivoire, and they gave them to Tim and me and Suzanne and Werner and Mr. McNeely to say thank you for coming and for serving at the camp. They said the colors and the patterns are from a tribe of Dan that they have in the north of Ivory Coast, and that it traces back to the tribe of Dan.
In the Bible.
In the Bible, yeah. So I'm really curious. I want to do some more research about that, but they were saying that it's like a traditional piece of clothing from that tribe.
Jessica was there to organize the camp for the kids in, what, Man was the name of it?
Man,
okay. And then also, she was a translator for hours and hours of Darris McNeely and others who spoke. Tell us about your trip now, what you saw, what you did.
So this whole process started months ago when I filled out a proposal for a Good Works project. We wanted to bring volunteers over to the camp in Côte d'Ivoire to be able to provide some classes for them. We wanted to teach English classes and computer classes and help provide some applicable life skills. So it was a whole process that started a while back with interviewing applicants and selecting volunteers. So we had two amazing volunteers. It really wouldn't have been the same without them. So
yeah, one from Guatemala.
Yeah. We had Werner. Yeah. Solorzano. And then Suzanne Lavity from California. And they were both amazing. Mm-hmm. They were really qualified candidates and volunteers. So it was a huge blessing to have them. And 2 weeks beforehand, we were in Bordeaux taking intensive French classes at the Alliance Française for 2 weeks. So we had classes for 4 hours each day.
For who? For them?
Mm-hmm. For all of us. We didn't know what French level the volunteers would have. And it's always good to have a refresher, especially before being immersed in a foreign language in a camp setting where it can already be kind of overwhelming. It's good to at least feel comfortable with the language foundation. So that's how it started. Tim joined us for the second week of classes.
Like Tim Pebworth.
Yes, okay. Tim Pebworth. So
for those who don't know, he is the French senior pastor of French-speaking areas.
And he's also my boss, so it was great to have him there. So the first week we were there taking classes, getting things ready. We were buying some final supplies for the camp, getting things organized, talking about the classes that they had prepared, and then we traveled to Mons for the camp. But we had a stopover in Mali on the way. That was a little bit scary. We said some prayers about that because just a couple weeks beforehand, there had been a massacre of a Christian village in Mali. So that was something that we specifically prayed about as well. And when we stopped there, we looked out and there were armed guards around the plane. But yeah, so then we had the camp for a week. And then after the camp, we went back down to Abidjan for the leadership conference. So that's just kind of, I guess, a general overview.
The camp was first,
yes.
Then the leadership conference.
Yeah, and with 2 weeks beforehand in France. So it was kind of a three-part trip for the volunteers.
Yeah, we noticed you were gone for a long time.
Yes. By the time, from the time that I left the office and came back, I think it was about 6 weeks.
Well, tell us about some of the things that were interesting at camp. You know, you grew up going to many youth camps, Northwest Camp, High Sierra, Winter Camp, and as we were talking beforehand, there were some very, very interesting things about the camp, and I'd like you to tell us about them.
Trying to anticipate how to bring these new classes to them without feeling like we were coming in and completely changing everything. We wanted to be respectful of the way that they've done camp in the past while also hopefully bringing in new classes that would be helpful.
For 22 children.
Yes. So our camp, the camp that we did in Côte d'Ivoire had 22 campers.
And so how many days was it again?
It was a week from Sunday to Sunday.
So were you able to occupy the children's time?
Yes. Yeah, we stayed pretty busy. In the past, they had been a lot more free-flowing with their schedule. Based on what I heard, I think that they would say, okay, today let's go do this, and now let's go do this. But there wasn't necessarily a schedule ahead of time. So,
Jessica, I've done a camp like that.
Really?
In Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Sat there in the morning and had a Bible study with the kids, and then they had lunch, mm-hmm. and then, well, what should we do now?
Yeah.
And the kids say, let's play soccer. I said, that's a good idea.
Exactly.
The next day they said, let's go into town, which is about a mile away, you know. Mm-hmm. So we all kind of walked single file down the road, you know, mm-hmm. but it was very, very free flowing. It lacked structure, but it seemed like they still
had a great time.
They had a great time.
I'm sure they did. With that in mind, knowing that campers can have a great time with that structure as well. Coming from my background with camps where literally every minute of the day is planned out, I wanted to strike a good balance of being respectful of the way they've done camp in the past, but also trying to find a way to organize it so that we could provide the classes that we mm-hmm. had brought as well. So,
were the classes any different from what we would do in the U.S.?
We did have, so Werner Solorzano was teaching English classes, and then Suzanne Lavity was teaching professional development classes.
Professional development, that was the computer class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, so it was a combination of both specifically computer skills and then also, for example, giving impromptu speeches, mm-hmm. and they maybe did some interviews or talked about setting SMART goals. So mm-hmm. there's that element of the class as well. And then we also did swimming classes for their first time, and that was really exciting to see because a lot of the campers had never even been in water before. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Tim was telling me has been actually a bit of a problem over in West Africa, is that because people haven't been in water, for example, when they want to be baptized, it can actually be a really scary experience for them. If you can imagine never having put your head under water before and then being completely submersed in water, that would be a little bit frightening. So,
well, I've been a minister, baptized people, and on very rare occasions we had that happen, mm-hmm. but we just had to have more people do the baptism.
Yes, to help encourage them to get all the way under the water. Yeah. But that was actually something that, in hindsight, when we were looking back at the pictures from mm-hmm. swimming class, especially on the last day of classes, each dorm had swimming class three times. From the first day, where they were all very hesitantly hopping into the pool, thankfully I think there was some positive peer pressure that was happening, mm-hmm. but everyone was really brave. They did a great job. But seeing them go from that timidity to, on the last day, I think all of the campers except maybe one were swimming across the pool. I mean,
swimming.
They were okay. They were able, I mean, maybe it wasn't the perfect form, but they were able to stay up and go across the pool. And of course, that's a skill that could potentially save their lives one day if they mm-hmm. fell into water. Okay. A lot of these countries, for example, where I visited last year in Cotonou, it's surrounded by water. Abidjan, where we were as well, and Ivory Coast is surrounded by water. So I think that that was something that was really touching to me, to see, first of all, their courage in being able to overcome the fear of getting into the water, and then seeing the amazing progress that they made. But then beyond that, also knowing that this is a skill that has the potential to save their lives mm-hmm. someday, and if the situation arose.
Why did you have the camp so far away, like 300 miles from the capital?
The facility was really good. Mm-hmm. It had what we needed as far as space and then access to a sports field. And then we had this pool that we were able to use. Tim did look at a couple other locations, for example, in Abidjan, but he took into consideration price and then accommodation and everything that we'd need. And also, we had campers from four countries. We had campers from Togo, Benin, Cameroon, and Côte d'Ivoire. That was a really special experience, I think, for them to be able to come together and spend that time together, because they don't get to see each other throughout mm-hmm. the year. So that was wonderful. Also, one thing that struck me, I was in charge of an art class as well.
Oh.
What I wanted mm-hmm. to do was have them create cards for people, who needed prayers. Mm-hmm. I gave them a couple examples and let them choose who they wanted to write cards to. And I just told them about some people who are in need of prayers. And I even mentioned the Angolan Brethren, actually. Oh. So some of them made cards for the Angolan Brethren to encourage them, the things that they're going through. They did such a great job. I'll have to show you some of them.
I have to commend you for the fact that you did an artistic lesson, but it had a purpose. It had a purpose to help lift somebody else's spirits.
We kind of based it loosely on the idea of mosaics. We had seen the mosaics in the basilica at Yomotsukuro. And so they really created some beautiful cards, and reading through them also was really touching, that they were providing encouragement and telling them to stay strong and trust in God.
You mentioned the cathedral there, Yamoussoukro. I know that Mr. McNeely, Darris McNeely, had spoken about it. You can't stop talking about it, about this unbelievable building in the middle of kind of nowhere.
Yeah, it's a bit controversial. It's actually the largest Christian church in the world, in the middle of nowhere in Côte d'Ivoire. And I forget, I think it cost, was it $10 million?
Oh, it had to be. That sounds cheap.
$300 million.
That's probably more than ballpark.
That's okay. Maybe we can do a quick Google search. I don't remember. But
so I've got it up right now, actually, on Google.
Oh, perfect. Chaz, yes, you can chime in.
But yeah, it was built for $300 million, and that was back in the 1980s. So take inflation into account with that, too.
Probably $500 million.
That's a lot.
Crazy amount of money. And it's this gorgeous building, but it's huge.
I understand that that money could be used to educate the whole country for 6 years.
Yeah. So one, it's in the middle of nowhere. So the people of the country don't even really get to make good use of it or come to visit. But secondly, all of this money, this crazy amount of money was poured into this building when the people in this country have so many needs that could have been addressed with that same money. So it was kind of these mixed feelings of being able to appreciate objectively how beautiful and impressive of a structure it was, but then also being struck by kind of the sadness and maybe the selfishness or the unwise use of money in wanting to maybe create something to impress other people while not taking into consideration the needs of the people in your country.
We've gone through that heartache with the work that we do in Africa, because we work in countries where people barely live on a dollar a day, and gasoline is $6, $7, $8 a gallon, you know, and you know, just living in impossible conditions. And more than 50% in some of the countries are unemployed. And then this last year, we've had a couple dry spells where people have lost their crops. And when they lose their crops, it's not just like bad, it's death. You know, they have no money, they have no food, and then having people who have billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars that they have salted away in some Swiss bank account, you know, and just live that way. It's so selfish and just something that needs to be fixed in another world.
Yes. Yeah.
Then from camp up in Man, then you went to the conference. I'd like to get your point of view of the conference. And I know that while you're a translator, you're very much a part of the French work, you know, as far as what we're doing to develop these areas, you know, for the future in sustainable churches. And I'd like to have some of your impressions, what you experienced and what you thought when you were working in the translation area for 4 days.
One of my overwhelming impressions was how encouraging it was to be able to see so many people from so many different countries all together, because we had people represented from the same four countries where the campers were coming from. So Côte d'Ivoire, Benin, Togo, and Cameroon. But then in addition to that, we had people coming from Nigeria and Ghana as well. So those would be English speakers, with the first four countries being French speaking.
So the only two English were Ghana and Nigeria.
Yes. It was really encouraging because they had never had anything of the sort before, with a conference covering all of West Africa with both the French speakers and the English speakers coming together. Everyone was expressing the same sentiments of how much of a blessing it was and how grateful they were to just be together, to be able to learn. And they were all very, very grateful that Mr. McNeely came over and was willing to teach them and answer questions and talk to them. On one of the last nights, we had a music night where we shared some songs, and there was a man from Cameroon who had actually written a song for the conference, and he talked about all the different countries that everyone was coming from. So that also included Guatemala, because Werner was there, and the U.S. With me and Suzanne and Tim and Mr. McNeely. So it was really beautiful. The song talked about fraternity and unity and joy of just being together.
Was it a solo or was it a choral group?
It was a solo piece with a guitar, but he taught us the chorus. So when he got to the chorus, we all sang together. Mm-hmm. And he had also translated the chorus into English and one into Spanish so that all of the languages were represented there. Mm-hmm. That was really sweet.
Spanish also. Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah. Yeah. So we all got to sing in Spanish together for Werner.
Now, there were several volunteers part of the Good Works Project. What would you say to future interested people, and how would you recommend this?
Wow. People talk about like culture shock, and one experience that really stood out was the drive from camp in Mont back to Abidjan for the leadership conference. It was supposed to be like a 10-hour drive or something, and then it ended up being like a 15-hour drive. I don't remember the exact hours, but I know we got there a lot later than we were supposed to. And there were government checkpoints on that road. And that's something where Ivory Coast was ranked among the top 25 most dangerous countries in the world until 2014 because of the civil wars that they were having. And this specific road that we were traveling on was one of those really dangerous places to be during that time because of all the major traffic that was happening in relation to the wars. So it was pretty amazing to be on that road now that the country is in a time of peace, but still there are these major checkpoints along the way where government officials ask the driver for paperwork. And when they see that there are foreigners inside, specifically white people, a lot of the times that can make them give you a bit of a harder time to ask for bribes and basically more money. But on our way back from camp, at the very first checkpoint, we got stopped and the officials wanted to look through our luggage, which was really, really a hassle because all of our luggage was on the roof of the bus and it had taken a long time for them to stack it properly so that the weight was good, so that it wouldn't fall off, put a tarp over, tie it all down. And we were all jammed into our bus. And so they made us stop. And so we got out of the bus while we were waiting. And the officials went up onto the roof and they started taking off the tarp. And basically, they were wanting us to give them a bribe of a very high amount of money to let us go through without them going through all of our things. Another concern is that sometimes when they're looking through the luggage, they'll plant something, like they'll put in drugs, for example, and say that they found that in the luggage. So you also have to be careful while they're looking through your things. So thankfully, the driver was up there kind of monitoring while they went through the things. So they did start undoing the tarps, but I was worried because we had so much camp equipment in there. We had our laptops, we had everything that we had used, like the projector and everything, to run the camp up there. I had no idea if they would come up with some reason to confiscate it. And that's something that I think can also give maybe a level of stress that you don't recognize at the time, but there's no sense of security of what I have is mine and people are going to respect that, or there are rules that if you follow them, you'll be able to go through smoothly. There aren't really any set rules. So that is something that we certainly have corruption in our government, but on a daily scale, we don't really have to encounter corruption in the same way.
It's a different level.
Less than 5 minutes later, there was another checkpoint, and then this man got onto the bus and said that he was the drug official, and he had this little badge that had a marijuana leaf on it. And thankfully, Mrs. Maboot, Mr. Maboot's wife, the pastor from Cameroon, she said, "We're a church. No one here is smoking." And so he left us alone, but he was threatening to look through all of our bags too to see if we had drugs. And so there are just a lot of unknown variables. We had also picked up a man off the side of the road who said that he knew how to get there, and he had been drinking. And
he wasn't quite so sure after he got in the car.
Yeah, so there were some other things that happened that just wouldn't really happen in the U.S. The driver didn't know how to get to our hotel, and so we picked up two random guys off the side of the street who said that they knew how to get there. I was showing them my GPS, and the one man was saying, no, we'll go this way instead, and it kept adding more time. And eventually, he actually just got out of the bus and left. So I don't know if he just wanted a free ride and he was telling us how to get to the place that he wanted to go to, because it wasn't even the fastest way to get to the hotel. So brace yourself for an amazing experience. It's hard work and it's tiring at times, but it is amazing to meet brethren across the world and to make those connections and to have an opportunity to serve and share the talents and the gifts that God has given you with others.
And you're grateful after you came back for the whole experience? And
I am.
Good memories.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, it's been wonderful talking to you today. It's been wonderful hearing about the trip and sharing some of your observations about the Ivory Coast and the people and the future of the church. It was just wonderful to talk to you. So please tell your friends about Inside United. You can find us on the homepage of ucg.org. Click on the podcast button and you'll be right up to the very last podcast and all the others that we've had. Also, please write to us. We'd like to hear from you. Write to us at podcast@ucg.org. Thank you for joining us. Come back again soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.